This is a reading of the lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Spiritual Hierarchies and the Physical World. Lecture 5, Cosmic Evolution and the War in Heaven, given on April 14th, 1909, in the evening. We have considered the working of higher spiritual beings in the cosmos by means of two examples, the development of ancient Saturn and the development of old Sun, which is the re-embodiment of Saturn. Today we must penetrate into the spiritual realm of the higher supersensible beings and consider their activity from yet another aspect. In the first half of these lectures, I referred to things that most of you are already familiar with, besides assuming that there are listeners who have not yet heard some of this. I also thought it necessary to again lay certain foundations, because in this lecture cycle we shall ascend high into the regions of spirit life. You will gather from what has been said so far that the most diverse spiritual beings are active in the development of an evolving cosmic system. But what, in fact, is the nature of ancient Saturn? Let us try to gain an accurate conception of it. It has, of course, nothing to do with our present Saturn. Rather, you must imagine that everything belonging to the totality of our solar system was already present, embryonically, on ancient Saturn. This includes our Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, and Jupiter. These bodies were within ancient Saturn and have developed out of it. Imagine a planetary body that has our Sun as its center and stretches so far out into space as to include our present Saturn. Only after having done this would you imagine correctly the size of ancient Saturn compared to our present solar system. The whole of our present solar system developed from ancient Saturn. One might even compare it, though only approximately, with the whole of the Kant-Laplace universal primeval mist, out of which, according to many of our contemporaries, our solar system has been formed. However, the comparison is inadequate, because most people imagine some kind of gas as having been the starting point of our solar system. We have seen that it was not gas, but a warmth body. Ancient Saturn was really a gigantic body of warmth. Yesterday we mentioned that where ancient Saturn transformed itself into the later Sun, old Sun, the cherubim worked into the universe from the periphery. You must now imagine that these cherubim, who were at work in the circumference of the old Sun, were already present around ancient Saturn, but had not yet been called to play their part. To put it trivially, although they were present at the periphery of ancient Saturn, they had not yet come to the point of accomplishing a high task. But other beings were also present in the environment of ancient Saturn, beings of a more elevated rank than the cherubim. These are the seraphim. The thrones come from the same realm. We have seen how the substance of the thrones, who stand one level below the cherubim, streams down, forming the warmth substance of Saturn. Therefore we can imagine ancient Saturn as a gigantic globe of warmth, surrounded by choirs of extraordinarily exalted spiritual beings. In Christian esotericism, these are called thrones, cherubim, and seraphim. They are the Dianic beings of Eastern wisdom. What is the origin of these choirs of exalted beings? Everything in the universe is in the process of development. Everything evolves. Therefore, when we want to imagine where the cherubim, seraphim, and thrones come from, it is best to begin with our own solar system and ask what it eventually will become. So let us briefly sketch the development of our solar system. The starting point was ancient Saturn. This transformed itself into old Sun, which transformed itself into old Moon. However, at the time of this transformation of old Sun into old Moon, we reach a particular evolutionary stage. The Moon leaves the Sun, and thereby we have, for the first time, in the instance of the old Moon, a cosmic body existing outside of the sun. Because it had cast off its coarsest substance, the sun could now go through a higher stage of development. Then the whole system developed into the system of our present Earth. Our Earth came about when the moon and the Earth, as the coarser substances and carriers of the coarser beings of the sun, separated out of the sun. But development goes on. The beings who must live their separate existence on Earth, those who have, so to speak, been cast off from the sun, continue to develop their sun singularity to even higher stages. Cut off, though they are from the sun, they continue to develop. They still have to go through the evolutionary stage of Jupiter. Then they must gradually mature so that they will be able to reunite with the sun. When the Venus stage of evolution is reached, then all the beings who today surge and live on our Earth will be incorporated into the sun again. The sun itself will then have reached a higher stage of development, because all the beings that had formerly been cast off will have been redeemed. This is followed by the evolutionary stage of Vulcan, the highest stage in the development of our system. The seven stages in the development of our system are, therefore, Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. During the Vulcan stage, all the beings who have evolved out of the small beginnings of Saturn will have been spiritualized in the highest degree. Together they will have become not just Sun, but the Over-Sun. Vulcan, likewise, will be more than Sun. It will have reached a maturity capable of sacrifice, the maturity necessary for self-disillusion. The next level of development, for a system whose starting point is a sun, arises in the sun, which is at first weak and has to throw off its planets so that it can itself develop further. The sun then grows stronger, reabsorbs its planets, and becomes a Vulcan. Then the whole is dissolved, and the Vulcan globe later becomes a hollow globe that is similar to the round of the thrones, cherubim and seraphim. The sun will dissolve into the cosmos, sacrifice itself, send forth its being into the universe, and thus become a choir of beings, like the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, who advance to new creative tasks in the universe. Why could the thrones give forth their substance, which was needed by Saturn? They could do so because they had prepared themselves in an earlier system through seven conditions, such as those through which our solar system is now passing. Before a system of thrones, cherubim, and seraphim comes about, it must first have been a solar system. This means that a sun must have reached the stage when it could reunite itself with its planets. Then it could become periphery. The sun itself becomes a zodiac. What we have come to know as the exalted beings in the zodiac are the remnants that have passed over to us from a previous solar system. What previously evolved within a solar system can now work creatively into cosmic space and give birth to a new solar system from its own forces. For us, the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones represent the highest hierarchy among divine beings, because they have already accomplished their development as a solar system and have risen to an exalted rank of cosmic sacrificial service. As a result, these beings have come into the closest vicinity of the most exalted divinity we can speak of, the threefold divine power, or the Trinity. We must therefore picture the Godhead as beyond the seraphim. We find this threefold divinity among almost all peoples as Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, and as the Father, the Word, and the Holy Spirit. The creative source of every new cosmic system also arises within this exalted Trinity. Looking back, we could say that before anything of ancient Saturn came into existence, the plan for it had to ripen within the divine Trinity. But the divine Trinity needs beings to execute its plan, and these beings must first prepare themselves for the task. The seraphim, cherubim, and thrones are those beings who are, so to speak, closest to the Godhead. In Western Christian esotericism, they are appropriately described as, quote, enjoying the unveiled countenance of the Godhead, unquote. The seraphim, cherubim, and thrones receive the plans of a new cosmic system from the divine Trinity through whom they originated. You will readily understand why I express these things figuratively. We are forced to convey exalted events with human words that simply are not created for this purpose. Human language was not created to express the exalted activity that took place at the beginning of our solar system, when from the Holy Trinity the seraphim received the highest plans that contained the whole future evolution of our solar system through Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. The name seraphim, correctly understood in the ancient Hebrew esoteric sense, is always interpreted as referring to the beings who receive the highest ideas and aims of a cosmic system from the Trinity. The cherubim, belonging to the second rank of the hierarchies, have the task of elaborating in wisdom the aims and ideas received from the gods. The cherubim are thus spirits of exalted wisdom, capable of transposing into workable plans what is indicated by the seraphim. The thrones, who are in the third hierarchical rank from the Holy Trinity, counting from above, have, figuratively speaking, the task of putting into practice the high cosmic thoughts that have been conceived in wisdom, thoughts received by the seraphim from the gods and pondered over by the cherubim. Beholding with the soul, we actually see how the first stage of the realization of the divine plan is achieved by the thrones in the flowing down of the fire substance. The thrones appear to us as beings endowed with the power to transpose into a primary reality what has been first conceived by the cherubim. This occurs because the thrones allow their own substance of primeval cosmic fire to flow into the space allotted to the new cosmic system. We can picture it very clearly by saying that an ancient solar system disappeared, died away. The ranks of the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones attained their highest perfection within this ancient system. According to indications of the majestic Trinity, they then selected a sphere within cosmic space. Here, they said, we can make a new beginning. At this moment, the seraphim received the aims of this new solar system. The cherubim worked them out, and the thrones gave forth primeval fire, their own substance, into the appointed sphere. Thus we can grasp the origin of our solar system. Other beings, however, were also present in the former solar system of which ours is the successor. They are not as exalted as the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. These other beings remained at a lower stage and came over in a condition in which they still had to pass through further stages of development before they could be creatively active, before they could offer sacrifice. These are the beings of the second threefold hierarchy. We have just been considering the first threefold hierarchy. The name of the first beings of the second hierarchy are the Kyriotites, or dominions, or spirits of wisdom. They are followed by the mites, the dunamis, or virtues, as Dionysus the Areopagite, and following him, the teachers of the West, named them. They are also called the spirits of movement. They are the second degree of the second hierarchy. The third rank consists of the exousiae, also called the powers or potentates by the teachers of the West. These are also known as the spirits of form. As we glance back to ancient Saturn, let us ask then where the beings of the second hierarchy were. We have seen that the beings of the first hierarchy surrounded Saturn, but where were the dominions, mights, and powers? We shall find them within ancient Saturn. If the thrones approached, so to speak, as far as the periphery of ancient Saturn, then the dominions, mights, and powers were within its boundary. Thus in ancient Saturn, within its mass, the dominions, mights, and powers were at work. The threefold ranks of active spiritual beings were inside the Saturn substance. Let us now come to terms, at least to some extent, with a fantastic modern theory of the world's origin as formulated in the Kant-Laplace theory. This theory claims that a mass of mist was the starting point of our solar system. It then imagines that this huge mass of gas began to rotate or to whirl. The theory apparently finds it easy to account for the splitting off of the outer planets during that rotation. At first, rings are formed and then contract. The Sun remains in the center while the other planets rotate around it. The process is pictured mechanically. A nice school experiment is devised to show in miniature how such a solar system arose. One takes a vessel full of water, throws in a large drop of oil, then cuts a piece of paper representing the equator and puts a pin into it from above. The drop of oil is then made to rotate. Small drops of oil split off and circle around, and the teacher making the demonstration says to the pupils, who are often quite mature, "Now here, you have in miniature the formation of our solar system." And then the whole thing suddenly becomes obvious, for how could it be more obvious than to see with your own eyes how a solar system comes about? Why shouldn't one be convinced that once upon a time out there there was a gigantic cosmic mist that rotated, and the planets split off from it to form miniature Mercuries and Saturns, just like the small drops separating from the large drops of oil? Amazement is the only response to the naivete of those who, to make it as concrete as possible, demonstrate the Kant-Laplace theory in this way. The fact is, they have forgotten one important thing, which on other occasions it is good to forget, but in this instance may not be forgotten. Those doing the demonstration have forgotten themselves, their own presence. After all, they set the thing in motion. Indeed, it is an incredible piece of naivete. But the simple-mindedness of our modern materialistic mythology is considerable. It is far greater, in fact, than that of any other mythology. This will be realized only in the future. So we have someone who sets the whole thing in motion. Therefore, we shall have to presuppose, if one can think at all, if one has not forsaken all the good spirits of logic, that spiritual powers were involved in the rotation of the cosmic globe. Aside from the error of placing primeval gas at the beginning instead of primeval fire, it cannot be assumed that the primal mass of gas began to whirl of its own accord. We should rather ask, where were the spiritual forces that moved these masses, for us masses of primal fire, so that something could happen within them? We have just spoken of these spiritual forces. The spiritual powers worked from the periphery and from within. Those who acquired their faculties in former cosmic systems worked from outside, while beings of lesser maturity worked from within. The latter brought about differentiation in the inner structures of warmth, as we have already seen. These beings were endowed with the highest intelligence and arranged everything that occurred there. What kind of task belongs to the first beings of the second hierarchy, the spirits of wisdom, curiosities, or dominions, receive what the thrones bring down from the universe? They regulate it so that a harmonious relationship comes about between the separate cosmic body that is beginning, that is Saturn, and the rest of the universe. Everything within Saturn must be arranged so that it corresponds to what is outside it. What the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones bring down to Saturn from the hand of God must be regulated so that these commands and impulses are translated into reality. From the periphery of Saturn, through the intermediary of the highest hierarchy, the curiosities or dominions, receive what is to be transformed and harmonized with Saturn's interior. Let me read that again. From the periphery of Saturn, through the intermediary of the highest hierarchy, the curiosities or dominions receive what is to be transformed and harmonized with Saturn's interior. A further transformation occurs through the mites, or spirits of motion, dunamis. Whereas the dominions are concerned with the highest arrangements within Saturn, it is the mites who carry out their directives, as it were. The powers, on the other hand, ensure that what has been constructed according to the intentions of the universe should endure as long as is necessary without disappearing immediately. We shall refer to this more specifically later. For the moment, we only want to characterize the matter in broad terms. The spirits of form, powers, are the maintainers. In summary, we may say, then, that within Saturn, the dominions are organizers, the mites carry out directives, and the powers preserve what has been formed by the mites. Today we shall not consider the workings of the next hierarchy, the spirits of personality, the spirits of fire, and the angels. Let us rather, with the knowledge we have newly acquired, turn our attention to the passage of ancient Saturn to old Sun. The most important aspect of the process was described in the previous lecture. When ancient Saturn changed into old Sun, the primeval fire was transformed into gas or air, so that old Sun consisted of the residue of the primeval fire. But the primeval fire was intermingled with what had densified into gas or smoke. Two substances were present then, primeval fire and a part of the primeval fire that had been densified into gas, smoke, or air, whichever you wish to call it. That, in essence, was the situation with the old Sun. As we shall see, things went a little differently for our Sun, which, in fact, developed through various stages up to the present into something different than the old Sun. Although, of course, there are people who assert that the interior of our Sun merely consists of some kind of gas. If we look into the various theories of materialistic natural science, we certainly do find astonishing things. In a small popular book, much in demand because of its low price, we find the assertion that the Sun's interior is not solid, but gaseous. But, incredible as it may seem, this popular handbook states quite specifically that this gas has the consistency of honey or tar. Now I will gladly grant a fool's paradise in which to move about in air made of honey to the individual who believes that, under certain conditions of pressure, a gas can look like honey or tar. But I would never wish that individual to move in air as thick as tar. Materialistic theories bring forth strange aberrations indeed. However, we are not speaking of our present Sun, but of the old Sun that really consisted of primeval fire, and of a fire mist or fire air. You will find the expression fire mist in Faust, for Goethe was familiar with it. You also will find it in theosophical literature. We must imagine the old Sun as consisting of a mixture of these two substances, but this did not happen of its own accord. Cosmic bodies do not simply condense. Spiritual beings must bring about densification. The beings who transferred the condensation of substance from ancient Saturn to the old Sun were the curiosities, or dominions. The dominions, working from outside, compressed the gigantic mass of Saturn so that it became smaller. The dominions continued to exert pressure until the old Sun became a globe whose mass, if you place the Sun at its center, extended as far as Jupiter. Ancient Saturn was as large as a cosmic globe, having the Sun in its center and extending as far as our Saturn. It was a mighty globe, as large as our entire solar system, and reaching out as far as the present orbit of the planet Saturn. The old Sun was a globe that extended as far as the present Jupiter. That marks the boundary of the old Sun. one can imagine the orbits of our planets as boundaries for the extension of former cosmic bodies. You see, we are gradually gaining a conception of the nature of planetary bodies by tracing their origin back to the activity of the hierarchies. Let us now continue. The next stage is again one of condensation. The third condition of our cosmic system is known as Old Moon. Those familiar with what can be learned from the Akashic record know that the moon arose through a further condensation, as far as the watery state, of the substance of Old Sun. There was no solid earth on the Old Moon yet, but there were fire, air, and water. The Old Moon introduced and regulated the watery element. It densified gas or air into a watery element. The second group of the second hierarchy, that is, the beings known as the mites or dunamis, brought this about. These beings also compressed the mass of Old Sun up to the boundary of the present Mars, and Mars represents the boundary line for the size of Old Moon. If you imagine a sphere with the Sun at its center extending to the orbit of the present Mars, you have the size of the Old Moon. We must now keep in mind that when the Old Moon arose out of Saturn and Sun, something completely new occurred. A part of the dense substance was thrown out, and two bodies came into being. One body took up the finer substance and beings. It became a more refined sun. The other body became a more dense moon. The third condition of our system developed in such a way that it remained a single planet only for a time. Then it threw off a planet that remained in its vicinity. At first, so long as it formed a single body, the moon extended to the orbit of the present Mars. Then the Sun contracted and was circled by a body more or less along the orbit of the present Mars, in other words, at the periphery of the original unified body. What brought about the division of the two cosmic bodies? By what means did one cosmic body become two? It happened during the reign of the mites or dunamis. Many of you will be familiar with the fact that a process occurs in the cosmos that is similar to the one we know in everyday human life. Wherever beings develop, there are always those who progress and others who remain where they are, as many a father knows who complains that his son at school languishes behind while others forge ahead. It is a matter of different rates of development. This is also true in the cosmos. At this point, then, when the mites, dunamis, had begun their task, an event occurred. We shall learn later why it took place, that is known in esotericism, as in all the mysteries, as the quote-unquote war in heaven. The teaching of the war in heaven forms an integral part of all mystery wisdom and contains a primeval secret concerning the origin of evil. Footnote from Revelations chapter 12, quote, "And a war flared up in the heavenly world. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. And the dragon fought in the midst of his angels, but his strength failed, and so there was no longer a place for them in the heavens. The great dragon was overthrown, the primeval serpent, who is of both a diabolical and a satanic nature, the tempter of all humankind. Onto the earth he was thrown, and all his angels with him." Wars in heaven are frequently referred to. In the Secret Doctrine, for instance, quote, "In their turn, the Rosicrucians, who were well acquainted with the secret meaning of the tradition, kept it to themselves, teaching merely that the whole of creation was due to and a result of that legendary war in heaven." End quote. Sorry, I'm unclear about all the quotes on that. End of footnote. At a certain time in Old Moon evolution, the mites or dunamis were at different stages of maturity. Some longed to rise spiritually as high as possible, others lagged behind or had at least progressed at a normal stage of development. Thus on Old Moon there were mites or dunamis who had progressed far beyond their companions. As a result, the two classes of mites separated from one another. The more advanced drew out the sun, and the ones who stayed back formed the moon that revolved around it. This gives a sketchy description of the war in heaven, the splitting asunder of the old moon that resulted in the accompanying planet, the old moon coming under the rulership of the mites, who remained behind, while the old sun was under the authority of the advanced mites. Something of the war in heaven rings through the opening lines of the Divine Gita, where, symbolically, at the beginning of the battle, we find echoes of this mighty struggle. It was an immense battle indeed. From the time that the Kiriatites or dominions effected the establishment of the old sun, until the time of the creation of the old moon, when the mites or dunamis began their mission, a huge battle, a gigantic war in heaven raged. The Kiriatites contracted the whole system to the boundary of the present Jupiter. Then the mites contracted the whole system to the boundary of the present Mars. In the middle, between the two planetary boundaries in the heaven, was an enormous battlefield. Picture to yourselves this battlefield in the cosmos. It was not until the 19th century that the devastation produced by the war in heaven was discovered again with physical eyes, so to speak. Scattered between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter is a multitude of small planetoids. These are the wreckage of the battlefield of the war in heaven that was waged between two points of cosmic time. This was when our solar system was contracted first to Jupiter and then to Mars. Astronomers today, directing their telescopes toward the heavenly spaces, are still discovering planetoids, namely the wreckage on the great battlefield of the war in heaven between the advanced mites and those less advanced, that also brought about the severing of the moon from its sun. Thus, when we consider the actions of divine beings, we see that external things appear as the expression, the outer physiognomy of divine spiritual beings. The end of Lecture 5.